Hello, welcome to the Ops Team.
Hello.
Episode 15.
Wow, we've made 15 already.
Yeah, 15.
That's pretty good.
It seems like forever ago.
Was that mine?
Yeah, I was against the glass wall. I was doing it against the glass. It was really a 5, 5, and a 5. I will continue the fingers thing as long as it possibly can.
This is also an art show.
It's going to take forever.
Can we get your feet involved?
It's 5, 5, and 5. There we go. Yeah, great. I high five my foot. It's been a while. So I'm looking at the blog. February 24th was the last post. We've had a few logistical and holiday challenges. Thanks for asking. I had a great holiday in New Zealand. Beautiful place. If you ever want to go, just make sure you go for like 2 or 3 weeks to see everything.
How long is the flight from Seattle?
From Seattle, it's easier to drive to Vancouver and get a direct flight to Auckland. It's probably about 11 or 12 hours. It's not as bad as I thought it would be, especially with a 14-month-old. But we flew here to San Francisco, waited in the airport, which was incredibly exciting with no lounge access with a 13-month-old. Woohoo. And then from San Fran to Auckland. And that flight was actually all right. But then on the way back, we flew Queenstown because we were on the South Island up to Auckland, waited in the airport for a while, 4 or 5 hours. Auckland to San Fran, waited in the airport for a while, and then San Fran to Seattle. So it was a decent length journey. With a child, it's more tricky, but with an adult, it's all right, depending on the adult.
Yeah.
But if you're not familiar with the Ops Team show, welcome. It's a show about holiday plans and vacation. No, it's all about the latest IT news for you, our IT operations, sysadmins, LAN admins, technical people out there interested in on-prem and cloud technology. I cover the on-premises stuff, and I'm also going to be covering the Azure stuff this week because we are missing Mr. Claus since he recently moved roles and his time commitments are dwindling for the ops team, but it's fair enough. It's not.
We're a man down, and I think it's fair to say, hey, we have an opening here.
Yeah.
If you folks want to apply for the role, you can find the role, I think, on Microsoft.com/careers.
That's a slash as well.
Yeah.
People who don't know WAX.
Yeah.
Oz covers open source stuff and DevOps. Simon covers enterprise mobility, devices, Windows stuff. Mm-hmm. And David, who's also one of our participants, he covers DevOps as well. And Rick, or the replacement for Rick when that person comes on board, covers Azure and Azure infrastructure. So between us, we try and cover everything we can. Now, we tend to spin the spinner to determine who goes first. Everyone gets 5 minutes. So who's going to be first up?
The spinner today is a USB key.
Yeah.
Whichever side the USB stick, sticky bit, USB
the
thing.
Ends. I don't know what call bit you call that.
The USB bit.
The USB, but it's the USB, not the whole.
Technically that's a USB B, I think.
Yeah. The silver bit.
Yeah, the silver bit. Whichever way, that's a good way to describe it. Whichever way the silver bit lands, that's the first up.
Go,
so.
go. Which means it's me. There we go. So I'm going to put my Rick hat on. I don't have a hat, unfortunately. I should have thought about that, really. And for Rick's, I've assumed a certain amount of information that's going to be relevant to you as on-prem and hybrid, which is useful. And I'll highlight some stuff from early March, which I think is relevant. So let me start the clock. Hang on. You don't need to go to my screen. Don't worry. There's me fiddling around with 15 different tabs. So, starting with Azure infrastructure now. Was that loud, really loud?
No, it was good.
I forgot my headphones today. Yeah. So there's a couple of things that have happened in the Azure space since we last recorded. And fortunately, it was only in early March, so it's only a week or so old. But there's been a lot of work done around storage and around data in hybrid environments. So replicating from on-premises into the cloud. And one of those is around something we're doing with SQL Server. So imagine you've got a SQL Server on-premises. You've got big databases that are full of hot, cold, and warm data. And again, it's consuming a decent amount of space. And whilst disk is cheap, generally storage is cheap, it's cheaper in the cloud. So to take advantage of that for on-prem workloads, you can actually start to utilize new capabilities that have been introduced in SQL Server 2016 release candidate, which is available to preview now, with new hybrid enhancements. So these capabilities essentially allow you to move transparently and seamlessly and unbeknown to the consumers of your database, the data that is warm and cold gets essentially moved to Azure and take advantage of Azure storage. And you can keep as much data in the cloud as you want, up to 60 terabytes per database in preview. So that means that it's great because it's transparent to the app that's using the database. So you've got a web app that's using database A that's on a local SQL server. That's fine. It uses, and there's hot data associated with that. That hot data will live on-prem. But if it's got data that's gone stale or it's old and it's been sat in that database for ages and hasn't been accessed or used or whatever, updated in the tables, then that data is going to be a candidate to be transparently and seamlessly moved up to Azure storage. So these SQL Server stretch databases essentially provide you with that seamless and transparent capability. And it works with what's known as always encrypted technology, which keeps the data encrypted while it's going across before sending to Azure, and the encryption key remains on-prem. So that's again...
Yeah, I can imagine people are like, okay, but what about...
Where'd my key go?
And there's actually some good information on... are you looking at my screen? No, I'm sorry, I wasn't sure. But there you go. I can't see the screen over there. a stretched database overview on MSDN. Actually, it's in the MSDN documentation, which Rick works on. I don't think he works on SQL Server Azure documentation itself. But it talks about some of the benefits and how you set it up and what it does and stuff, and some good examples. So key, if you're using SQL Server, if you're interested in SQL Server 2016, it's certainly a valuable capability to help reduce storage consumption on-prem and embrace the cloud. So that was one thing in hybrid, the Azure SQL database. But there's also some cool stuff around hybrid storage with Azure StorSimple Virtual Array. So StorSimple is an on-prem appliance that allows you to utilize the cloud as a tier of storage. So it's got local tiering with SSD and hard drives, and then it's got, it uses the cloud in Azure storage as a third tier. But what happens if you want to failover into the cloud? What happens if you want to orchestrate failover from on-premises StorSimple into this virtual array that lives in the that can live in the cloud and Azure? But also in conjunction with that failover, you want to failover virtual machines as part of an orchestrated failover from on-prem to the cloud. And that's where integration between StorSimple and Azure Site Recovery comes in. So I've got a nice document here that I can highlight on the screen for automated DR using Azure Site Recovery for file shares hosted on StorSimple. Incredibly wordy title, but it's exactly what it says on the tin. That's what it does. Essentially, you're setting up Azure Site Recovery to integrate runbooks as part of a failover process that not only fails over VMs that are running on-prem into Azure, but those VMs that are running on-prem, some of them will be file servers that will be using StorSimple as the backend for those file servers. So the orchestration of StorSimple failing over into Azure and the VM file servers that need StorSimple failing over into Azure can be orchestrated by Azure Site Recovery. So your file shares and file servers get replicated and recovered and failed over, all automated using Azure Site Recovery, which I think is actually pretty cool, and using, again, a key capability of Azure in Azure Site Recovery. So there's loads of documentation on that. I'll provide the links there. There's loads of cool stuff. Like I say, the virtual appliance is available for StorSimple. If you don't have the physical appliance on-prem, all of this stuff works with that as well. And they were the key announcements, I think, from this week. There was another one for SQL Server, actually. You can not only utilize that example I talked about before of stretching a database into the cloud.
We have an animal.
There's a cow wandering around in there.
Oh, is it? I don't have my headphones, so I can't hear the cow. There you go. My time is up. But I've started, so I'll finish for Rick. You can actually start now integrating on-prem SQL with Azure SQL as well.
You should stop the
cow still going.
Yeah.
It's supposed to turn off automatically.
I actually quite like the idea of the cow and the animal noises keep playing behind to remind us that you're in overtime.
Right, there you go. It turned like an alarm going off. Like,
right. I'm going to adjust the settings. Stop all noise. Well, I don't know why I did it there. Oops. Right. There we go. Anyway, so that was that was Rick's 5 minutes.
Oh. Okay.
It's you. You get the chance.
Now, okay. Speaking of SQL Server.
Hang on. Whoa. I was still fixing the timer with the cow issue.
I'm trying to steal some time.
Have you raised a change request to be able to fix the timer?
It's all right. I am dev and ops.
Oh, okay.
Good. So I've fixed
it. So you just did it without any change control and it's fine.
It's fine. I mean, make it so. Right. So are you ready for your 5 minutes?
Yep.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
So SQL Server, I was anxious every time you mentioned SQL Server, gonna steal my...
I wouldn't do that to you. I wouldn't announce super that SQL cool Server news. Is available.
Oh, on Windows, yeah.
Yeah.
So SQL Server on Linux. Woo! It's pretty big news. A couple of months ago, when I was talking with some guy in product group, he mentioned this like very casually, and I continued talking for like 3 or 4 seconds, and like then what was that? I said, you didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know about this. So it's pretty big. I'm still having a lot of questions from people. And there is a topic going on Hacker News. So it's like people are just sharing comments. There are 472 comments in 2 days in Hacker News.
Positive or?
Mixed.
Right.
Yeah, because this is more like a open source people hang out. But one of my favorite one is, this would never happen if Steve Ballmer was still alive. And the reply is, he is not dead. And a link to Wikipedia for Steve Ballmer.
just to prove it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So SQL Server will be running on Linux. And in the beginning, it will be available on Ubuntu and also as a Docker container, which is more cool.
That is cool, actually, because it's not even available in containers for Windows at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, whether you could make it work or not, I don't know, but maybe.
So educate me a little bit here. Do you need a different container? If you're using Docker and you've got a container that's going to, an application which is containerized on Docker, is that just going to work on the same thing on Windows and Linux or not?
The Docker management is unified across Windows and Linux. So if you've got a Docker container that's on Ubuntu, it wouldn't work on Windows natively, but it would if you had a SQL Windows container that could also be managed by Docker.
Right. Okay.
So if it's packaged as a Docker container, you would manage it using Windows or Linux. Yep. But because of the, we have DLLs, they have different things.
Yeah.
I don't know about the plans now, but I don't see that happening.
No, you can't run a Windows container on Linux and vice versa.
Right.
A Linux container runs on Linux, Windows container runs on Windows, and the respective apps inside there, but they can all be managed unified by Docker.
Yeah. But you can run a .NET application in a Docker container in Linux, for example. So not the application, direct application, but in a container. Or we have this thing called Mono.
Uh-huh.
So it basically gives you the ability to run executables, Windows executables, in Linux. It's like a wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
So you can run this in a container, Docker container, and you can run a .NET application or some executable. Of course, there are some areas you need to spend some time planning, thinking, but it's possible in theory at least.
Okay, cool. Sorry, derailed that conversation.
So if you want to get more information, just search for SQL Server on Linux.
It'll be in the notes of the show.
It'll be in the notes in the show, yeah.
Of course, we're efficient.
And Microsoft is being more and more open. We just showcased, I have to check my screen for the name, Software for Open Networking in the Cloud. SONIC is the acronym.
SONIC,
yeah. Games Master.
The next.
Don't go there. We only just told you about Games Master. You're already calling it out.
Yeah.
The next thing is we're going to be starting to make our own Switch OSs or something.
Not the next thing, actually. It's the current thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we are part of this Open Compute project. The idea behind this is we are running data centers, huge data centers, and we have many different hardwares. Switch, network, routers. And if you're using different brands, you need to hire different people for managing different brands, obviously, because the command line is different.
Mm.
So this is a burden for us. This is high maintenance for us and for the other big players. So what we are doing is we are collaborating with these big vendors like Arista, Broadcom, Dell, and Mellanox to provide a software layer on top of this hardware.
Mm.
And we can use this common software in different branded switches.
We've done this a while ago, though. That was it OMI, Open Management Instrumentation?
Yeah.
And that essentially provided that common instrumentation layer to manage, assuming all of the switch vendors got involved.
And,
So yeah, you could go to the Cisco dedicated tools or dedicated APIs, or you could use OMI.
Yeah, so it just makes troubleshooting a lot easier for huge scale like Azure or other. And we open source this. So it's not like Microsoft is working with these companies and creating yet another proprietary technology. No, we're just open source it. So any company in theory can just get the code and start using on their hardware. Some vendors, some big vendors, I'm not going to name them, is not a part of this conversation. But most of the big players like Arista, Broadcom, they are part of this. And this is, I think, the future, because, you know, the software-defined networking is becoming more and more, in getting more and more interested every day. Because you don't have to be running a large infrastructure. Even if you have your own data center, like 20 servers, networking becomes a mess after a while. Because
as in the lab right over there.
Yeah, especially with these containers are coming at our lives. Yeah. It was hard for VMs. It's even harder for containers because now you have to manage maybe 10 times the number of VMs in your infrastructure. So it's a good moment.
Did the cow come on? Because your time is up. I don't know if the cow.
No, we missed the cow that time. I think you might need to re-DevOps your cow at this point.
Should have made a change.
Maybe go back again. I think we should have a better change control system in place for the cow, just to make sure that it is working as expected.
Yes.
You maybe need some user test scenarios going on as well at some point, but we can just keep going. Here we go.
We're going to implement change control and just figure out what's going on here.
This will be the final spin.
No, it was another spin because it might be me again.
Okay, it just ended up in nowhere, spin so again, let me try that again.
5 minute silence. Okay, something real.
Okay, one more again. Here we go. Boo! Nope, and again. Let's keep going until we get there. Yeah!
Who is it, me again?
It's you again.
Right, okay, so you're going to wrap us up. Right, so...
we're doing the wrap-up.
Hopefully, the cow is back, but we'll see. No guarantees, but we shall see. So, my 5 minutes on on-premises infrastructure starts... now. So last week, or at least a few days ago, a few of us were involved in the TechNet Virtual Conference 2016. So I want to give a big shout out for that, because it was a well-organized, well-oiled event that all the content for which is now available on demand on Channel 9. So if you're not familiar, if you didn't tune in, there were 3 days of content. Day one was really a series of TED-style talks, so thought leadership, strategic directions, not just from Microsoft speakers. There were a couple, people like Jeffrey Snova was there talking about technology from and that will be great for on-prem people. But there were other sessions that were from headhunters or a person from Williams Formula One team. So there's certainly a selection of different speakers with different life experiences and job experiences. And some were about your career as an IT pro, some were about data, some were about technology. That was day one, very inspirational. Day two was this guy talking about Windows with a series of speakers, technical topics all about Windows, enterprise mobility, and so on. I'll let Sai talk about his bit when he's on his section. But the day three was all about infrastructure, hybrid infrastructure, so a lot of on-prem stuff, and then a little bit of Azure stuff as well. So in the morning, we started off with Jeff Woolsey talking about data center fundamentals, so giving us a broader overview of some of the investments across Windows Server 2016. Then we dived into, or dove, is that a more appropriate term? We went deeper into some of the specifics on NanoServer with Rafat Issa. Great session there. Taylor Brown did a session on containers. We had Joseph Chan talk about OMS, the Ops Management Suite, which we all know and love on the show. Rick actually came and did a session on Azure fundamentals, so compute storage networking and what that's all about. And then we had a wrap up with a session on Azure Stack from Charles Joy. So a jam-packed day, an hour-long session each one, all available on Channel 9. I'll provide the links. Definitely worth watching if you can spare the time. Now, leading on from that, the last session was Azure Stack. About a month or two ago, we talked about the Azure Stack hardware requirements, that they were quite big, single-node solution for this first proof-of-concept deployment in the technical preview one. A minimum of 96 gig of RAM, recommended 128. A decent number of processors, decent amount of storage, and so on. But people weren't necessarily overjoyed with the requirements, so people started to tinker a little bit. And in the ops team, we know all about tinkering. So we made sure that I wanted to highlight some of these tinkers that people have made. So the first one on Daniel's tech blog, and Daniel's an MVP.
Do you want me to show your screen, by the way?
No, it's all right. I'll give him a shout out. So Daniel MVP, Daniel Newman, apologies if I'm pronouncing that wrong. He's written a blog post that I'll link to on running it on lower hardware. So assuming you're still running it physical, he managed to get it running with a few tweaks to the XML and PowerShell files that come down as part of the download. He managed to get it going on a single socket 4-core system with 32 gig of RAM, running Hyper-V obviously, single NIC, one OS disk and 4 data disks. So he managed to get that running on significantly reduced hardware. Now your mileage may vary, the performance, the installation time, all of that will definitely change, but you can still do it. That was on physical hardware on a small scale machine. Now somebody else on J0F3's tech blog, with the collected knowledge of a system engineer, so the kind of people we love on the show, he managed to do it on a VM, or in a VM more specifically. So using nested virtualization, he virtualized Azure Stack.
Wow.
And he's provided a lot of information that you still need a decent amount of resource to do it. You've still got to have a physical server that's got enough resource to run a 32 gig plus VM. But he managed to install it in a VM using some of the same tweaks that were in the previous post, but now specifically in a virtual machine. So cool stuff. The blog post that I'll link to has all of that stuff in. Just great community stuff just to help people try it out and not necessarily succumb to the requirements of what is a recommended deployment. Fortunately, we've got a bit of hardware, so we can deploy recommended. How am I doing on time?
Is anyone trying to do this on Azure?
Well, you can't do it on Azure. Good question. The reason being is you would need nesting to run it in an Azure VM, and nesting, you would need Windows Server 2016 as the host, and that's not where Azure is at today. So that's why you can't do it in Azure today. Who knows what will happen in the future, but yep, on-prem is the future for today. I've got 10 seconds left, so I'm going to stick to my time. I'm actually going to save people listening to the cow and close it off there. So thank you. That's your on-prem news this week.
Moo.
Moo. There you go. Round of applause. Yeah, thanks. So all that's left is for you to give us your five.
It's always best to save the best till last, I find.
On occasion, but yeah. we'll take an exception to that rule.
Yeah,
that's you see.
Harsh.
Right. No. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
3, 2, 1.
Okay, no news this week.
Excellent.
Okay. actually, I'm going to start back off with the Technet Virtual Conference last week. It was pretty cool, I have to say. That first day that I don't know whether folks realised, but Rick managed all the content for that.
He did. Sorry, shout out. That was a tip to Rick.
A nice thing to see, and great to see Mary Jo Foley doing that with Rick. It was a really nice, inspirational day. I ignored most of it because I was panicking, getting ready for the next day, which was my day all around Windows and enterprise mobility. Started off the day with a session from Rob Lefferts over in the Windows enterprise and security team, all around some of the cool new stuff that's coming in Windows 10, including something called Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection, ATP.
Just rolls off the tongue.
It does, yeah. Which,
is that not a tennis tournament?
It is, yes, the ATP, yeah. Maybe Heike is a tennis fan. It was actually Heike who PM'd that product, so kind of cool. Oh, well,
have you going to change the name?
Yeah.
I can see that.
Pretty cool stuff. Helps you understand what's going on with advanced persistent threats inside of your organization, and uses Windows Defender to help you do that. Cool stuff. Take a look at the session to learn a load more. We then went into sessions about how to manage Windows 10 with MDM, so Intune. And then we also had another couple of sessions in there, which were really cool and very technical. Great stuff. Go ahead and watch those. It all got wrapped up, though, by Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com and Brad Sams from Petri. Thurrott shot me in the nipple with a Nerf gun.
Oh, I thought that was like a metaphor for something. No. You shoot yourself in the foot, he shot me in the nipple.
Yeah, shot me in the nipple. at point blank range. Really hurt. Guns,
there was two different types of bullets. One that whistled.
Yeah.
And one that was just more foamy. But the ones that whistled had a hard end.
They did. And I think it was a whistler that hit me. I got hit in the nipple with a whistler.
Nice.
Anyway, that brings me on to something slightly more technical. Oh, just a sideways that conversation.
What was it again?
So, at the same time, last week was RSA down in San Francisco, big conference where everyone gets together to talk about security stuff. We announced something there called Azure AD Identity Protection. Again, it rolls off the tongue. But it's a pretty cool service, actually, under the hood. What this thing does is it takes your authentications, of which we have a lot into Microsoft. There's 4 billion authentications a day into our systems, of which around about 1 billion are purely Azure Active Directory. So pretty huge stuff.
Daily.
AD, yeah, just AD.
Yeah, daily.
Daily, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, every single day.
It's me just pressing refresh.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody's just skipping. Come
on. This might change your behavior with what we've got here. So basically, identity protection does this. It looks at what's happening inside of your environment. So are your users coming in from a place where they've never logged in before? Are they coming from an anonymized network? And then it applies a set of rules that you've built around what to do in those circumstances. Mm. So what you may say is, if this person is coming in and they're coming from an anonymized network, that might be okay, but let's make them do an additional factor of authentication.
Yeah.
And we'll allow them access. Or we could say, that user is coming in from an anonymized network, let's just block their access. We'll still allow them access if they're not anonymized, but they'll be blocked in that set of circumstances. So it's pretty cool. It's completely adaptive. And the nice thing about it is it's not just dumping another report on you as the admin. It's doing something for you, which is amazing. Nobody else in the world is doing this kind of stuff.
So I'm seeing, not that technology specifically, but on more and more websites now, I'm seeing once you've logged in the first time, if you've not logged in from this device before, you're prompted for answer your security question.
Absolutely.
Or we'll send you a text message with a code, those kind of things. Obviously, it's different technology. These are just different websites, like bank websites and so on. But
it's the kind of thing that you've probably seen in the consumer space for a while. We actually have been doing this for a while on things like Xbox Live. So if you sign in from an Xbox that you've never signed in from the first time, you might get prompted for an MFA. But here's the cool thing. We actually are out there looking for all these leaked credentials that are out there as well. And what we'll do is, if one of your users has actually appeared on one of those leaked credentials lists, then we can actually say to that user, at this point in time, you need to go and do this thing because your company has decided that because your credentials have been leaked, you need to do this. So that might be they have to do an MFA, they have to do a password reset, they just get blocked from having access. And these things all layer on top of each other so that you can use the conditional access rules that we already have inside of Azure AD. And that can mean things like this. You could have your HR application exposed out there to the internet.
This is on-prem.
On-prem, yeah. And then someone could come in from the internet. They would be coming from, say, a regular work machine that's out on the internet, and they get access to it seamlessly. They'd maybe have to enter one set of credentials.
Mm.
But they come in from a machine which is on the internet, and we see that their passwords have been leaked. What you're going to do is say, that person, before they're allowed access, they need to reset their password. But because they're coming from outside of the corporate network, they also need to do a multi-factor authentication.
Mm-hmm.
And we put all of that in place as they're logging in, which is pretty cool. And it's in preview, and you guys can try it right now. Cool. Just by going into
very nice.
Provide the links.
Yeah.
I don't know if the cow happened again. Did it move?
Cow happens. Right,
was that yours? Was that everything? Anything else?
Well, the only other thing to mention about that is that we've also put in this ability to, because MFA becomes such an important thing, if you haven't got lots of people using MFA, we'll now tell you how many folks are using it inside of your organization and then prompt you to say maybe you should get more people signing up for MFA.
Get more phones.
So, yeah.
Nice. So that concludes your 5 minutes. All that's left to do is wrap up the show. I'm going to give some shout outs. I don't know which camera we're on. Are we on this camera? Are we on that camera? Excellent. So a couple of weeks back, actually, right at the end of January, just before I went on a holiday or vacation, you don't need to share my screen, definitely, because I'm in my inbox at this point.
Oh, sorry.
Checking the ops. Don't share that. You'll see all these different emails. A person called Luna Jernberg, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. The first time Luna emailed, I wasn't sure if it was legitimate or not, but the second one is very specific. So we definitely know you're a person. Thank you, and thanks for getting in touch. I'm not going to read out the email. I nearly read out her email address then, but her email address would suggest potentially was a bot, but not.
I think that somebody might have a PPI issue.
Yeah. But really started liking watching your podcast. This one, Patch and Switch, well, some show that Rick turns up for, and TWC9 on Channel 9 is a part of this person's weekly ritual. Smiley face.
Nice.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
We also have
Alan, shout out to Alan Miller, who mentioned us on Twitter again towards the end of January. Hopefully you're still watching. He first started us with Boo, tweeted us with Boo, and then all the items relevant to a modern day computing professional. That's the, hopefully he's referring to the show. But thank you, Alan. And then Aaron Bateman pinged us on Twitter and said, catching up on episodes, thanks for the shout out. So this is your second shout out. Now I'm a minor geek celebrity. Yes, you are. He finished that tweet off with hashtag come at me, ladies.
There you go. Okay. Good luck.
Yeah, we need to work on this hashtag. Yeah.
Let us know. You know, we're opening a surgery soon, so let us know if we can help with anything. And then John Gartrell also mentioned us. Just wanted to let y'all know. I'm not sure if he's from the US or from outside, but y'all, I enjoy the show. Smiley face. Keep up the good work. Thank you, John.
I've got one as well from David Lamb. David says, just finished getting caught up on the last few episodes. Awesome content. Thank you very much. When will episode 15 be available? Now.
Well, it's now.
If you're watching it.
It's not right now.
Yeah, right now. You're watching the episode.
Now.
Yeah.
Excellent. When I get round to editing. Who edited the last ones?
It was Rick.
All right.
Yeah, that's why.
I haven't seen it.
Not up to the usual standard that it actually it should
well, be. Yeah, let me make this confusing. Sorry. We are recording this on the 1st of March.
Okay.
No. It's the 20th of March.
It's the 10th, isn't it? When are we doing this?
But anyway, we'll sign off. We'll not take any more of your time. Are we on security cam? Right. Sign off. There we go. Thanks for watching Another Ops Team. We'll be back with episode 16 sometime in the future. Stick with us.
No problem.
More shout outs. Contact us on Twitter. You can get in touch with us at the Ops Team. I'm at Matt McSpirit.
I'm at SlyMonster.
At AllSpastonWitch.
We'll provide it in the link.
Yeah.
And at RicksterCDN if you want to get in touch with Invisible Man over there. And don't forget, we are hiring. So if the job is still available, which I think it is, or the job is still open, I'll include the link to the job careers page so you can check it out.
And if you fit the hashtag description, you're more than welcome to apply.
Yeah, that's right. Hashtag come at me, ladies. Yes. Excellent. Right. See you next time.
See ya.
Bye.